bitch. You don't need to shout.
I volunteer as tribute.
You do not talk about Fight Club.
Why so serious?
I could do this all day.
Welcome to Frame of Mind.
So I'm Matt, and this week we have a guest. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Bradford.
Awesome.
And I'm a human pile of garbage. No, I don't know. I don't know what to say with this.
Bradford is a filmmaker himself. He has been to film school, and he has a pretty good grasp on the current cinema trends and blows me out of the water when it comes to
film.
So
we brought someone qualified?
It's only because I have no life. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I watch movies to substitute a social life.
So what's your favorite movie, Bradford?
Mad Max Fury Road.
If I'm going to die, I'm going to die historic on the Fury Road.
Really? Fury Road?
It's like the best movie ever. Best action movie ever.
Hmm. And how many times have you watched it in the last year?
Oh, no.
In the last year? I don't know. Oh, gosh. It came out in 2015?
Sure, we'll go
So in the last year, it's not been as many as the first year it came out, where I watched it over 30 times. And that's not an exaggeration.
Wow.
Do not, my friends, become addicted.
In the last year, it's probably been under 10. But every time I watch it, it's beautiful. And I like other movies. I don't just like action movies. Like, Mad Max Fury Road is my favorite, but like, I'm also a fan of, you know, quiet indie films like Lost in Translation and Francis Ha, which I'm sure neither of you have even heard of. But
no.
Yeah. All right, we're talking about Baby Driver this week. B-A-B-Y.
Awesome.
We have some fun car action, right?
There's better types of action, but car action's pretty good.
Some car action.
Yeah.
That's my baby.
This movie particularly is right up my alley, and I'm a huge Edgar Wright fan, from Shaun of the Dead to Spaced. And
yeah,
Scott
see,
Pilgrim.
I need to say that, because I also, well, I wouldn't say I'm an Edgar Wright fan, but I love Shaun of the Dead, and that's my second favorite zombie movie, right after 28 Days Later, which is...
That's my first favorite and second favorite, so...
Yeah.
Of course, then there's no list after that, because I don't like any other zombie movies.
Yeah, no.
I loved World War Z.
No.
I thought it was such a cool
Why?
Perspective.
Yeah.
Because it was like every other zombie movie. You just have these slow walkers. And this one was like, it looked at it as an epidemic instead of looking at it as just this... zombies.
That's why I love 28 Days Later, because it was like zombies were actually what zombies would theoretically be like, and they wouldn't just live forever eating nothing. I don't know. But I also loved Hot Fuzz, Scott Pilgrim. I haven't seen World's End, but I assume
that's
it's pretty, just as good.
Just as good as...
Yeah. Those quick cuts that he does, you know, all the time. I love that. That's like his trademark, I would say. Super awesome. Also, I don't know if Queen's in this movie, in Baby Driver, and also plays a part in Shaun of the Dead. I don't know if it's that way with any of his other movies. Do you know?
No. But there is, if you're like a diehard Edgar Wright fan, there's going to be a few Easter eggs in this movie that probably, like, there was one particularly that I laughed out loud, but no one in the theater understood what was going on. It's just a quick little reference to the inspiration for Baby Driver, which was actually a music video that he did for... I'm not going to say, because I'm just going to put my foot in my mouth if I do, but it was like a bank robber heist type thing. And that opening scene in the movie is basically the music video. The music video was, it's a getaway driver, and they all go out and they get in something and he turns on some music. And it's very similar. There's like, you know, windshield wipers and there's dancing. And,
right.
And you see... like 2 seconds of it in the movie of the actual original music video.
Interesting. That I did not
just
know.
Just on the TV. So.
So, premise of the movie. Let's give a little brief. You want me to do it or you want to do it?
I can try and do it. I don't know if I'm ready for this. Okay, so you have this savant driver, Baby Driver, and
his name is Baby.
His code name is Baby.
Baby.
That's right, Baby. Anyway, so he's this amazing driver, right, that owes a debt to Kevin Spacey, whatever his name is that I can't remember. And basically he's just working for him until his debt's paid off and driving around bank robberies, different kinds of heists and stuff, and he's trying to get out. He's a good-hearted kid looking for a way out of a criminal world. And that's about where things start to get complicated, and we see what he does. Yeah, that's all I can give.
Things are not quite what they seem, and the hope that he has to be able to get out is very quickly challenged.
Diminished.
Does he make it out?
And you guys didn't even mention the girl.
And he finds a love interest. Pretty typical.
Yeah. Well, I'd say the love interest is actually pretty pivotal part to the story. It's kind of his motivation.
Well, anyway. Okay. What did you think of?
I've got things to say about that.
Okay. We won't get into that too much then.
What did you guys think overall, generally, of the acting? I mean, we had a huge cast, obviously, here. You know, Jamie Foxx, Kevin Spacey, John Hamm. What'd you guys think?
So Ansel or Baby, that's his name, right?
Ansel Elgort, yeah.
Yep.
Not the biggest fan.
No?
No. And especially, like, the opening scene, and he's, like, dancing in his car, and then he gets out after the heist, and he's dancing around on the streets. It just felt like a cheap, dirty musical. And though, like, it's music-driven, and the movie's supposed to be about music, and that's what he does to drown out the world, and the ring in his ear, like, and that's in the preview, so that's not spoiling anything. He has
A hum in the drum,
right. It just, like, it feels super cheesy, and
see, I like that aspect of it, though, because it made it almost original in my mind, because it reminded me of the scene in 500 Days of Summer, where he kind of, like, flash mob breaks out into dance, and everyone's choreographed, and you have all these sweet little cues, you know, and I thought it was kind of...
Wait, High School Musical?
No.
Crazy.
I'm kidding.
Don't reveal my deepest, darkest secret. Okay.
Gotta get your head in
but
the
yeah,
game.
But yeah, I didn't mind that, so that's funny that you didn't...
It felt... I don't know if it was just because it was too raw, but, like, he felt uncomfortable while he was doing it to me.
Yeah, he didn't make it feel... like supernatural, like that's what he would normally do.
Right.
I don't know if he's just kind of like rigid in person. Maybe he just wasn't, I don't know. But I liked that aspect that, you know, throughout the movie, everything was on cue. You know, the music plays throughout the entire movie, just so everyone knows. And I thought that was cool that, you know, everything, you set a cup down, you set the money down, everything is on cue with the music, and that really adds effect to make you notice the music.
It gives a good cadence to the story that's happening.
Well, and I have some things to say about that, but I want to wait till spoilers. Because I think it worked mostly.
Okay.
There were times where it didn't.
I
don't want to say when, but I'll leave it at that then.
Right.
Where it's like things are too perfect.
Well, and that's where I also have some issue, because this isn't a spoiler, but it's like, either choose a side. You're a movie with a few accents, musical accents, or you're a musical. Like, you know, just own it, you know.
Well, that's the thing that's interesting, because I look at this, and the closest relative I can see to it is Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim borders on being a musical, because you have moments of musical numbers, you know, including villains breaking out into song, and you have, like, the whole premise, like, the B-plot is the band going through the Battle of the Bands, so they go to these concerts, and so you have these kind of little moments right. punctuated with a short musical number, and this kind of goes even further, where people are moving and dancing sort of to the music, which I didn't mind, again, except the couple moments where I did.
We'll get into that, because I'm interested to hear what points you didn't like. Okay.
But as far as, like, the movie as a whole goes, I feel like there was really good character development throughout. I feel like it was really cool to see him kind of making the realization of what's happening in the situation that he's been put in, and a really slow trickle of his history, what's been happening, what happened that got him into it. Like, it doesn't just, like, fire hose you right at the beginning of the movie, right, and you learn everything. And I love that. I love that, like, you're trying to piece together, okay, he does this, but why does he do this? And he's got this guy in his life, and kind of where does this guy come from? And they still don't really answer that one, but there's just
talking about
his stepdad.
Stepdad.
Yeah, his adopted stepdad or whatever
they call him. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I love that slow trickle of background information, so that you're left trying to decide, like, he's got a really unique set of skills. I will find you. Just kidding.
But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
Little Taken quote there. But he's still mysterious in his path to where he is today.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm with you, Aaron. Like, I've already spent most of my time here dissing on the movie a little bit, but really, truly, like, it was great. Like, I especially by the end, I absolutely loved it.
Well, by the end, it definitely took more like Edgar Wright feel, in my opinion, as far as graphic goes, and
I guess so. Like, my thing was, like, ultimately, like, it was pieced together like a good heist film, where it's you kind of slowly build up everybody, build up the characters, build up the relationships, and then, like, once the sort of the match hits the powder keg, like, it explodes, and then it's just like, I was just totally hooked. Because by then, even though to me the middle of the film kind of dragged, and it had, like, the sort of the weakest sort of story elements, once everything came in together, that's when it just became this perfect cocktail of action, beauty, and became just awesome. So even though I wouldn't rate this as high as every Edgar Wright film that I've seen, at least after the first viewing, it still is great. So
let's talk about ratings then along with that, Bradford. I know you were really excited to go see this movie. Like, it was one of your highlights of the summer. And do you feel like it lived up to that? How would you rate it?
I can't, like, the... It's interesting, because by the end of the movie, like I said, like, it was awesome, but there were points in the middle that pulled me out of the movie because I didn't feel like they were handled well. So while, like, I would rate generally, like, stepping out of every Edgar Wright film that I've seen, like, I would always be like, oh, that was 5 out of 5, no problem. I would go maybe 4, maybe even, like, 3.5, which is, I don't know how I feel about that, but yeah, like 3.5, 4 on the whole. If you had asked me halfway through the movie, I would have been like, this is like a 3. Like, and on a Edgar Wright scale, it'd be like a 2. Like, if you were comparing it to all his others, like, I would say it was my least favorite coming out of it after first viewing is my least favorite, but that's still better than most movies, in my opinion.
Better than Transformers? You think so?
Oh, yes. I'd watch this over Transformers.
I would watch this over all the I would watch Baby Driver 5 times in a row over watching one Transformers film.
I don't know. I like all the girls in Transformers better than I like the girl in this one.
Really?
She was cute. She had a way about her, but I didn't feel like she had that big of a role, and I have issues with her character development as well. So we'll get into that little old Cinderella there.
Yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan either. And especially where, like, you have all... I should probably save that for spoilers.
Yeah, you typically have a bad track record with that.
I do. Okay. What would you rate it, Matt?
Oh, boy. You guys aren't going to want to hear my rating.
Let it rip.
Like I said, I enjoyed it more than Transformers, but that's because it was... It was different. It was something a little bit different than Transformers. But that being said, I mean, I have to give it, if we're going to do stars, because I can't think of anything clever to rate it as.
Which gear? Screaming tires.
First, second, third, fourth, or does it have a fifth gear?
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah.
Oh.
Full throttle?
You're full throttle in second gear in this movie, I would say.
Really?
So what, 2.5 stars with that?
No, I'd give it 2. I would, 2.5 stars, I guess I'd have to say, but I'm going to stick with 2 since everyone else, I think, is going to be higher than that, but...
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I have issues with it that we'll get more into spoilers, but I didn't feel like... I had read that he had spent like 10 years developing this, right? And he had this idea for such a long time, which kudos to him. That's awesome. But if it's just too much like a couple other movies that I'll bring up.
Yeah, I did. I honestly felt that way as I'm watching the movie. Like, okay, this has little bits of the Italian Job in it. In fact, like the first scene, that's exactly what I was thinking, was the Italian Job. All the car shots of them trying to get away from the heist seemed very reminiscent of Italian Job. And then just most other heist movies, it was very much
I would
a heist.
Never say that this movie is 100% original.
Yeah.
Like the premise is pretty tried and true, simple.
Right. I mean,
guy's
it's a
criminal,
heist movie.
Guy meets girl, wants right. to get out. That's it. Like, that's the premise. You've seen it before. You'll see it again. This movie's not going to surprise you in that sense.
Yeah, it's more just clever storytelling.
Some clever storytelling. Some villains that you don't suspect are villains, and then non-villains, villains that end up not being villains as much.
Yeah.
But beyond that, like, it's really just... It ends about the way you expect it to end.
Yep, pretty much.
Which I guess I didn't really get into, but we will talk about specifics of the ending, but I remember the ending just being like, oh, okay. Like, it wasn't like, oh, sweet, it happened this way. It was just kind of like the very, 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 very end, like how all the characters end up. I was just like, oh, okay, I'm fine with that ending.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, like, super clever or funny.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm interested. I wanted to ask you guys this. If you had to give an Oscar... to one actor in this movie, who would it be?
Ooh.
Because I know who it would be for me, and that's also one of the, I mean, yeah, I'm just going to dog on this poor movie the whole time here.
I know who it wouldn't be. I wouldn't give it to Ansel Elgort.
Right.
Certainly. I mean, like, I didn't have a problem with his performance, but it also wasn't, like, a standout compared to... You know, Jamie Foxx and John Hamm. And,
not at all. I thought the accent was pretty forced too. I didn't love that. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. It just kind of pulled me out of it personally.
We'll have to talk about why. We'll have to talk about what I just call the Keanu Reeves effect. We can get into that later.
Oh, well, I'm excited for that.
It's a thing. It really is. Especially if you watch a lot of action movies like I do, you start to notice it. But, yeah, I don't know. I really liked John Hamm a lot. Like, Kevin Spacey felt like just a funny Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like, he's great. He's comedically brilliant in it. He balances his character very nicely. But John Hamm just felt like there was a lot going on in his brain. And you could kind of tell just by, and I think, and this will get into spoilers, but there's one particular scene that I felt like where the filmmaking choices were a little odd, but John Hamm's performance was so good that it really grounded me emotionally what was happening.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, okay. And it was like one of those things where, you know, someone talks about, oh, this character is known for this. He can do this certain thing, or he can act this certain way. And then when you see it happen, you're just like, oh, like, and he doesn't, it's not like over the top. It's just like, oh, there it is, you know?
Right.
It's good stuff.
What about you, Aaron?
I think Sam deserves it.
Samwise Gamgee?
The little kid, Sam.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, I had no idea.
He kind of stole the scene.
He really did. I think he did a good job there.
I don't want to say any more because that's spoilers. Because that was kind of a pleasant surprise in the movie.
Yeah.
Just know when the little kid gets there, it gets pretty good.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't impressed with that. Any of them really. Like, I don't feel like any of them really deserve anything.
Yeah.
If I had to.
Yeah. If you had to, that's the game.
Oh, if you had to.
It could be supporting actor. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, best actor.
But there's not even that many supporting either.
See, okay, what? I'll tell you, I would give it to Jamie Foxx. I feel like his character overall was the most consistent and the most believable, like, development throughout. Like, I never questioned why he was doing something. It was set, and he just kept going. Whether that's writing or whether that's his performance, I felt like his performance was good. I just felt it was believable the whole time. And everyone else I kind of questioned throughout. And
it's kind of different than other roles Jamie Foxx has played also. Like, it's less of the comedic, less of the slapstick, less of the just straight up not going to care about any of the other actors. Like, he's got a really deeper level to him, even though he's just a thug. Like,
right.
He's Bats, but then as it goes on, you find out that he's very analytical of the other people that he's with. He's very observant of everything that's going on.
Yeah, he's almost skeptical looking out for number one.
And then I feel like he did that really well through his acting. That it shows. And once you find out that he's analytical to that point and that he's trying to be observant, then you're like, oh yeah, he's kind of been paying attention this whole time.
Right.
I liked that.
Well, and he balances the humor and the drama really well. Like, because he is sometimes the butt of the joke and sometimes he's the, you know, he's the deliverer of the joke, as it were.
Yeah.
But he never like seems to like, he plays it really well, is basically what I'm saying.
Right.
He does a great job.
Okay, you guys, can't steal my guy. It's my guy.
No, it's a good point.
Well, and I don't know. I don't necessarily think any of them. Well, I mean, Jamie Foxx did do a really good job, but like, none of them are going to get an Oscar for this.
Well,
that they should. Like,
I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, basically, who did the best performance?
The best. Yeah. Oh, it would be between, like, for me, John Hamm and Jamie Foxx. Like, both those guys just killed it.
I'd agree with that.
I'd say that's a fair assessment. As far as like production goes, I really love all of their advertising material. I love the look that they have, and I love that translated into at least the beginning of the film. So, like, the poster's very colorful, very interesting, very good use of abstract elements that are then, as you see in the movie, part of the movie. But then they open up, I think it was the starting opening scene. He's walking out of, like, a bank after the heist, and it's looking straight up the building, and it's got two gold poles going up the building, or gold siding, or whatever, and it's like the center line of a road. And I thought that was genius. Like, that's exactly what I saw the first time I looked. It's looking up a building, and it looks like you're looking down a long road, and then it comes down and it snaps back into reality. And
right.
I literally didn't even notice that.
Oh, I loved it.
I can't even
I didn't
picture
notice it
what
until they
you
drew it out for us.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, it's like right at the beginning. He just looks up at a building. They draw out these like tire mark lines driving up the building. I forgot about it, honestly, until Aaron just brought it up. So
I loved it, and I felt like it tied in with everything up until this point.
I wish they would have done more stuff like they did in Scott Pilgrim, because I feel like Scott Pilgrim did a lot of that. Remember the bathroom
graphic
scene
effects.
Where it was like, it was like it showed his bladder, and then he went to the bathroom.
Pee
and
bar.
Yeah, just emptied it. Just fun little things like that I wouldn't have minded, and it would have made it, for me, I think it should have been more playful and whatnot.
Well, I don't want to get off of the production design, but that's kind of one of the interesting points about this being a more dramatic work for Edgar Wright.
I felt like it was more of a story just being told.
Right. Like, Edgar Wright's known for being the comedy action guy. Like, Scott Pilgrim, World's End, Shaun of the Dead, they're all action comedies with an equal dosing of action and comedy. This is, like, action, drama, and some comedy mostly at the beginning. with a few jokes sprinkled towards the end. And that's where it kind of starts to falter a little bit.
Yeah. But
Production design, yeah, sorry.
Production suite, loved all the stunts. I wish there were more of them. Can I just say that? I wish there was more.
Yeah.
Especially the car stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Like, in the middle of the movie, there's not much. Which kind of surprised me, and I think part of why...
It starts out it so strong, though. Like,
yeah, no,
he's doing some real badass maneuvers and stuff, and then it just dwindles off, and you get back into just groundwork of the story, and...
Your title is Baby Driver. I want to see some freaking driving.
Well, and that's where I'm a little bit torn, because... The ending for me, like the big action set pieces towards the end of the film, would not have been paid off nearly as well if the middle of the movie had a whole bunch of driving and people.
That's true.
And being stuff.
Because it does have to continually build throughout the movie, and if it's just loud, louder, louder, loudest, it
Right, and that's why that ending stuff hits so well for me.
Yeah.
But in the middle, there is a little bit like I feel like, because. I don't know if this is spoilers. Well, you see little bits of it in trailers, like a foot chase. And I'm like, oh, this is a foot chase.
Hopping in a car in a driving movie. You're going to choreograph a foot chase?
And I thought, oh, he's going to do a thing and then get into a car and then try and do some cool stuff and then jump. But no, there's a lot of foot chasing stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's... That was one where it was just kind of like...
But I think that's effective. Well, and we're kind of leaning into spoilers now, but... Like, it gets you. It makes you want him to get back in a car, and you become attached.
Except
to that moment.
For this is where we get into the music portion, and this was one of the two scenes that I thought the music was not used effectively. Because at that point, when he starts running, there's still music playing because he's got his earbuds in, and everything he does is timed to the music. And so I didn't feel like he was in that much danger.
That's true, because it's still pretty.
Everything's still a music video. Everything's still. He's running along. He's hopping tables in time with the music. People are shooting at him in time with the music, and it's like it still feels like he's in control.
Instead of this erratic,
instead of
danger.
Exactly. Instead of something like his music comes on, but he's not able to do stuff in time with the music, and you see him stumble. Like it felt a little too effortless for him to be running through.
That,
like
yeah.
And it was like, oh, this needs to be a little bit scarier, and it wasn't.
I think that's a good point. And
that is a good
especially
point.
Where in other parts of the movie, it pulls back into that music and the fact that, oh, shoot, I got to rewind this like 15 seconds so that I can get back on the cadence.
Exactly.
That plays such a heavy role in the course of the movie. And he does it several times, trying to tune the radio station to find just the perfect song for the mood, whatever.
Yeah.
And
well, because like when he's driving, like there's two heists early in the film, and when he's driving, everything's happening to the music, and it makes sense because it's his zone. He's in the zone. At the end, he gets the music, and it's beautiful. But then when things go topsy-turvy and go upside down, things are still in time with the music, and it's like it still feels like he's in control. Like I wanted more chaos because he's scared because things have gone in a way he wasn't expecting. And
that's a really good point.
Up.
I feel like, yeah, they totally miss, now that you say that, the dynamic, you know, opportunity right there. Yeah, because they have music the entire time. It's like if you would have stopped the music, we would have known.
Right.
You know, we would have, yeah, we would have made notice, like,
so
holy crap,
that.
he's out of it.
We're full on into spoilers now, but.
Spoiler alert.
They
spoilers.
Do that in the diner at the end when Buddy's there and he has his gun. And he pulls up his iPod, and he asks him what he's listening to, and then he pulls his headphones out. And that's like the first time in the movie when it just completely dies.
Yeah, all the music's gone.
And that was really effective there, but I don't feel like that was like the climax that...
Right.
They
should have
used
it as a tool somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, is like, that's a great moment when there is no music, and so there's... You mentally hear the silence.
Mm-hmm.
In these other moments when he's on the foot chase, and also since we're in spoilers, the arms deal gone bad was another one where people are shooting in time with the music,
right.
And that should have been like, I'm okay with there still being music, but it could have been cut more traditionally where you have, you know, people going back and forth and stuff like that where there's music, but it's, he's trying to make sense of it all. Like, he can't get on because he's not in control anymore. And so you could have still had the music. It just wouldn't have lined up so perfectly, and you would have noticed it a little bit more. It would have felt more erratic, even though he's got his earbuds in.
Even if it was just a few dissonant beats, just like a misstep here, or he slips his hand off the steering wheel for just a moment, and then he gets back onto the beat. Like,
well, it would have been interesting in that scene that you're talking about, for instance, like, all of a sudden something bad's happening, and then, yeah, he misses a beat or something, and he's like, hides and tries to get back on beat or something, you know, and you see right. him in this peril being shot at, but what's his priority? I need get back on beat. Like, yeah. Then you'd really draw attention to, mm-hmm. like, oh man, this kid needs his music to function, otherwise
right.
he's no good.
Right, well, because, like, with the arms deal, like, as soon as people start firing, it's like, because they're doing tequila, they're saying, you know, yeah. and so it's like, and it's like, bang, 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 and it's like, everything's on the beat. There's not
right.
And, like, as someone who's very musical, it got to this point where it's like, I know the next time someone's gonna fire, they're gonna fire these three times on these three beats, right. and they do, and it's just like tension gone. Like, I know what's going to happen.
Right. Well, I felt like this whole movie was pretty predictive. You knew what was gonna happen. Predictable. Sorry. You knew what was gonna happen.
Right.
The whole time.
You know,
that's my biggest issue. Is I felt like this was a complete. Rip-off is too negative of a term, but copy isn't harsh enough.
Homage.
Of Drive meets Guardians of the Galaxy. For me, that's yeah. that's what this was. And so much so, like, of Guardians of the Galaxy at certain points that I was just... was like, are you serious? You're going to have tapes from your mom that you haven't... That, you know, you have literal tape, just like in Guardians of the Galaxy. Make it a floppy disk. Make it a something else. Don't.
Well, in fairness, it was music that his mother wrote and produced herself,
which I'm fine with. But it's still the concept of, like, I'm gonna risk my entire life and the life of others to go back and get this tape. You know, like, he should have just gotten out of Dodge, but no, he went back to Kevin Spacey's character to get that tape from his mom, just like Peter Quill did.
You're an imbecile.
And.
So aside from, like, that general story matching, do you feel like there was more that tied into Guardians of the Galaxy? Because I don't know that I
agree. Well, it was so, you know, they were trying to make this score, and I didn't feel like this soundtrack was nearly as iconic as Guardians. So it didn't hit as well with me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is for Edgar Wright, but for me as a general audience member, like, I didn't recognize all the songs. I didn't know them all. You know, whereas Guardians, it was like, oh, I know this song, I can really get into it. And I felt like they're trying to go for the same feel as that, are they not? And
well, that's the thing, is that's why I liked it, is that there was lots of songs that I didn't recognize.
Hmm.
And I mean, like...
You're weird like that, though.
Well, that's the thing, is like, I mean, like, talking about Guardians of the Galaxy for a moment, like, yeah, okay, these are songs that I know and I can sing along to, but, like, they don't really, I don't know, like, it's stuff that I recognize. Whereas this, it's like, I love discovering new music. And so, I mean, there wasn't anything, like, crazy that I was like, oh, I've discovered a new favorite song.
Well, it was also...
But that kept me unfamiliar with what was going to happen.
Right, and I get that from that kind of aspect. If you're going to play so heavily on the music, you should probably tell a story with the music that's unheard of. Otherwise, you just know what's going to happen. But, But the other thing about it is it was, you know, more oldies type music, just like Peter Quill's listened to, you know. Why wouldn't he be up to date? You know, why wouldn't he like the songs of today? Why wouldn't those be on some of his top hit lists?
I feel like they had a few that I felt like were a little bit like some rap songs.
And granted, I didn't know all the songs, so I can't really say as to when they were made. I didn't look it up or anything. Yeah. But it felt like a lot, the majority of them were older, because that's what maybe his mom was into or whatever at the time, and just like Guardians. And so I was kind of not about that. Now, he doesn't assemble and find a family. He does find a love interest, but that's typical of any movie, not necessarily Guardians.
Well, and here's the thing. I think this is better than Guardians of the Galaxy. In most ways. not in every single way. Like, some of the writing in Guardians was really good, but it is a little bit more comedic. The thing about Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, I still haven't seen the second one, so, because I suck. But, like, the first one, while it was good, it still felt like it was assembled in a lab. Where it's like, how do we make the perfect funny movie? Get some
how
really
do we get
funny
the most
characters.
Bang for our buck. Yeah.
Get a bunch of songs that everybody knows, have some action, and have a generic villain. Whereas Baby Driver took risks.
Yeah.
And
it didn't.
And even though I would say it's not perfect, they didn't, like I said, some of the musical choices and having things on the beat, I don't think that worked. They still made choices, and this was clearly, it still felt absolutely like an Edgar Wright film. With a lot of the films out of the Marvel Universe, like from Joss Whedon, and he's the only one that I can think of at the moment, but like Joss Whedon, none of those, they felt like kind of a Joss Whedon film.
Right.
You know, and I remember when Edgar Wright left Ant-Man, and everyone's like, well, it'll still be like an Edgar Wright film. You know, he still wrote the screenplay. And then I watched it, and I went,
No,
this is not an Edgar Wright film.
No, this is
any
a cookie
stretch.
Cutter
well,
safe
and that's,
movie.
And that's the thing, is that gets into Edgar Wright's writing, which is to say that Edgar Wright's writing is not the best. If you look at, like, Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, and World's End, those were all co-written by Simon Pegg,
mm-hmm.
who's a comedian. You look at Scott Pilgrim, where the vast majority of the dialogue was taken, lifted directly from the comics, from somebody who's
writing. He didn't have
writing
to write as much.
He didn't have to write as much. And here we get into territory where some of the especially the more dramatic lines were a little bit of a groaner. Like, you're just like, oh, really?
Yeah.
We just said that.
Cliche, like... Couldn't think of something clever.
Which is that's the thing. Edgar Wright does that. He has sort of cliched stories that are told really well. And even though there were, I don't remember, there was a couple specific lines that I was just like, did we really just say that? But then these were more towards the end of the film, and then we got into the action, and we got to what Edgar Wright is good at, which is the visual storytelling.
And see, I almost would have loved him taking and owning the risk of the beginning, like Aaron was talking about. Like, you walk into the movie, and he's, like, in the zone listening to his music, and there's this song playing, and he's just going at it, you know, having fun in the car, waiting for the guys to come back in. He's dancing around. And I was like, this is actually kind of fun. This is kind of cool. You could almost make this, like, a musical that I might enjoy because there's so much action. But the fact that it just kind of dwindled off, that was the first scene,
yeah.
And then he got thrown off his groove, and he was just pissed the rest of the time or something, you know? I was like, well, where did that go? You're going to pull that up and never bring it back? Like, I don't know. Have a West Side Story moment if you got to snap your fingers or something, you know? I don't know. I didn't like that it felt like one movie at the beginning. Middle, like you said, didn't feel like really anything. It just felt like a typical movie. And then at the end, all of a sudden, it gets into this Edgar Wright headshot, lots of blood, sweet action movie. And I was like, wait, what are you, man? What am I watching here? I don't even understand.
Well, I think even in the middle of the film, I still felt like it was Edgar Wright. It just was, there was not a lot. Part of it was there wasn't as much action. Because, like, when I go into an Edgar Wright film, like, when I went through Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, I remember just, like, being exhausted getting out because it was just so intense. Like, every couple seconds there's a new joke or visual gag or action scene that's great. And this is not as much. It's definitely more, like, really, I should, next time I sit down, I should be like, I'm expecting a heist film, which has usually not as much action until the big heist at the end.
Right.
And
Drive is similar in that way.
Right. And so I wonder if part of my misgivings about the middle were just because Edgar Wright, it's going to be amazing. I'm just going to be nonstop entertained. And I wasn't, because they get into the dramatic stuff. And not that it wasn't handled badly, because I feel like if the middle was true garbage, the ending would not have been nearly as
right.
impactful.
Well, it's just
for
that the middle is kind of like the bulk of the story, where you're developing your characters. And that's where I felt like the disconnect happened. Like, okay, Kevin Spacey kind of sets himself up as, hey, I know you're out now. You did your one last job with me, but hey, guess what? I own you. You know, I'll break your legs. I'll kill that little girl. You know, he threatens him, tells him that he's going to kill his new girlfriend of 2 days, by the way, which I'll get into later. You know what Kevin Spacey is. He's ruthless, right? I mean, that's what it sets it up as. But then at the end, going on with Kevin Spacey, oh, well, I'm going to have a complete change of heart and I'll just sacrifice my life for you. Like, what the F is that about? Like,
because
no, that
I
was,
see that you're in love. Yeah.
Oh, you're in love? You've known her for 2 days and for some reason she's gone and left her entire life, which granted they said isn't much. She doesn't have much going on for her. She got a crappy job, but I don't think she wants to risk being in prison for the rest of her life or dying because obviously she knows
right.
that he's getting shot at. So what was her motive for running away with him in the first place? I don't, like, running away just to get away, sure. But as soon as you found out baby was in trouble, that he's in with some terrible people, it's like, you've known this guy for 2 days. Like, you're really willing to commit like that? You know,
right.
I've had girlfriends for 6 months that aren't willing to commit for half as much of that.
And let alone when you bring in murderers and thieves and everyone else into the, like,
diner.
She saw the struggle there. She sees that he's not hanging out with good people. That's when you're like, okay.
And when
I don't know you well enough, obviously. That's enough.
He shoots John Hamm, right? And she sees it, runs away. I get it. She's probably freaked out, but wouldn't she be even more freaked out? Like, I don't know who you are. Have a whole Padme and Anakin conversation here, like,
no, it's all cured with a kiss.
He
smacks one on her, and she's not concerned anymore.
Well, that's why I don't like her character, because
it's basically
just like,
a Disney movie.
Just a
magic kiss cures all.
Yeah.
Well, here's a phrase that I heard once that I really, really liked. It's like, if you buy the premise, you buy the bit. I don't exactly know what both of those words mean, premise and bit, but basically it means, like, if you're buying into the movie that there's a kid who can listen to music and be the best driver in the world, you can kind of just roll along with everything else. Where you really run into struggles is when characters start acting against the nature that you're established, like with Kevin Spacey's character.
Right.
It didn't bother me, because I sort of felt like Kevin Spacey's character was, his bark was meaner than his bite.
Which, yeah, it was.
You don't really see him do a lot of terrible things.
Well, you see him with the body.
Someone.
Yeah,
right.
You see him with the body in the trunk. You know he's fine with this. The way he treats his nephew, like, oh, chip off the old block, that this kid is just like saying, wave a gun in her face, she'll give you hundreds. And so you know he's a terrible person, and then for him to have that character change, I was pissed, because I love Kevin Spacey when he's evil. Mm-hmm. Him in he's the only reason that I still watch House of Cards, because he is just so dang evil in that movie, and I love, or not movie, sorry, TV show.
Series.
I love it.
Any pugilist worth his salt knows when someone's on the ropes, that's when you throw a combination to the gut and a left hook to the jaw.
Couldn't get over that. And that's what I felt like with every character except for Jamie Foxx. I felt Jamie Foxx had the most consistent throughout, and that's why I like Jamie Foxx in this,
yeah.
Or at least his character in this, because I felt like never did his actions, you know, falter. He was always this crazy, mean guy.
No, that's true.
And so that's why I liked him.
So another issue I had with Deborah, his girlfriend that he meets in the diner, and you find out that his mom also worked in the diner, and the hook to like get him interested is that she's singing Baby as she walks by. And so he knows that she sings. He knows that she works at this diner. It's kind of reminiscent of his mom.
He's in love with his mom? Is that what you're saying?
Is that what you're freaked out
about? Big time Oedipus complex. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But that's where it ends. Like, they don't develop that more, or this connection back to the diner.
They do laundry together.
They go on the laundry. They go on a couple dates. Well, and like, this is where, because this is like the fantasy of the movie. And
no, but wait.
Okay.
So like,
okay.
He has this such a fond memory of his mother, right? Like every flashback when he's considering what he's doing, why he's doing it, they're crushing the car. He flashes back to his mom. Like when he sees her, it flashes back to his mom. Everything keeps going back to his mom. But you don't know enough about this new character, Deborah, to know if she's, like, worthy of all of this adoration that he has.
I think that's what they're trying to say, is, like, they're just trying to hint, give you enough information to say, yes, he holds her in as high as regard as her mom, as his mom.
But why? That's where I feel unsatisfied, is there wasn't enough development in her background in why she suddenly became so important to him. Like, yeah, it's there, but why?
Hmm. Well, and this is where I want to get into the Keanu Reeves effect a little bit. Because this is the real thing. You look at, like, old films. Okay, so Keanu Reeves, is he a great actor?
No.
You can all say no, he's not. But
it's hard for me because I love Matrix so much, but
I think The Matrix is incredible. I think John Wick 1 and 2 are incredible.
Honestly think there are, now including John Wick, there are three roles he's good in. Matrix, John Wick, Bill and Ted.
I hated Bill and Ted. But for action films, you'll notice this a lot, especially in the 80s, and it's starting to come back a little bit, as you have the stoic main character. And there was the great YouTube like video essay about this, and the stoic main character, the reason why it works so well is because especially the male audience member goes in it and puts themselves as the main character. Because their face is kind of a blank slate.
So it's easy to project.
Because they don't emote. It makes it, you project your own emotions on it.
Mm.
And so the thing about Edgar Wright is that you're never going to, I don't think you will ever get a realistic film from Edgar Wright. He always all of his films operate in some level of fantasy, whether it's the idea that a kid can fall in deep, passionate, beautiful love with a girl he met in the diner, or it's a guy who can fight with video. He's got crazy powers, who martial right. arts guys and shoot that can shoot flames out of their hands and stuff. And,
right. Right.
You know, it's,
well, and that's the bit I can buy. You know, the main premise, you know, he's a driver that's only good when he listens to his music. He's basically Mozart in a go-kart, to quote the movie. You know, he's amazing. I can buy that premise. It's harder for me to buy, like you said, the character development kind of premises. Because, I mean, I guess you got to treat all the actors as fantasy actors, even though it's supposed to be in this real world, is it not? I mean, that's the setting. So I'm trying to think of, like, okay, what would a real person do in this setting, kind of thing. And so whether or not, I don't know, maybe I'm getting off topic.
Well,
continue on what you were saying.
I want to stress, this isn't necessarily a good thing. You look at Fast and the Furious, that operates in a fantasy world. Are those good movies?
No.
Some people like them. Transformers, it operates in a fantasy world. But, you know, you can say the same thing about movies that operate in the quote-unquote real world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really mean it's good or bad. It's just a matter of how the story is told. And so with this, even though it looked a lot more grounded, it still is in a very cinematic-type universe. Because in the movies, a guy and a girl meet, and they can just fall in love. It just happens.
Right.
And even though I'm a really cynical when it comes to romance, it worked well enough for me in the context of the film, just because she was as much a reminder. She was a romance. She was a love interest, but she was also a reminder of his mother and how beautiful and pure she was, and how he's like, I don't really want to be a getaway driver my whole life.
Yeah.
You know,
but see, and I felt like, to go over what like Aaron was saying, was, yeah, he's probably projecting that onto her because he doesn't know enough about her,
mm-hmm.
you know, really. So we're getting his perception of this girl. What is she really like? And I guess that's what you're trying to say. You don't know enough about her character to really understand what she's doing, why she's doing it, and maybe that's what bothers me. Whereas, like, in Drive, you have the same thing. You have this love interest that really isn't available, but still, you know, she's a love interest, but as soon as she finds out, you know, same thing, what kind of people he's involved with, she's like, get away from me, like, you yeah. know, back out of here. And so I felt like that, I love Drive personally, and I also love the music in Drive better than in this movie, just that ending song, really. But I feel like, you know, have a more clear distinction talking specifically about the girl, you know, of your character development. Why, you know, the win. If you don't spend enough time, she's such an important part in his life. I feel like they should have spent more time giving us, you know, maybe she was in a, maybe the restaurant owner was even more terrible than we saw, you know, and it was like, yeah, she needs to get out ASAP.
Well, like, with a movie like Drive, I'd say Drive is definitely more in the realistic realm. To me, Deborah, it was like what Aaron was saying. Like, it's not, I don't think it really is about the romance. I think it's about what she, what Deborah represents as much as anything right. else. It's about his past. It's about being, living a slightly normal life, you know, and
because it does go back to that in the court hearing, she explains, we're just friends. I think we both wanted it to be more than that, but like, so what, for just a friend you met 2 days ago? Okay. I'm done with that. But.
She didn't even know his real name until the court case.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's where it gets into the area where I can forgive all that. Because this is such... It's an Edgar Wright film. So it's like, this is not going to operate on the normal laws of relationship dynamics. And no movie does, really. I mean, any movie that tries to, it ends up being outrageously boring and uninteresting. Because life is boring and uninteresting.
See, and I think that's the hard part, though.
Frozen has commentary on that.
I think that's the hard part is for, like, maybe an average Joe Schmo going to the movie, you know, maybe doesn't know who Edgar Wright is. Maybe they've seen him, but they don't really know that, you know, Shaun of the Dead is his work or Scott Pilgrim, whatever. So maybe he's not thinking, like, oh, well, this is an Edgar Wright film, so I'm going to buy into the universe or whatever, you know, I kind of can accept that. That's why I think the way I watch movies is probably too skeptical. You know, I go into a movie, I want it to be as realistic as you portray it to be. Like, I'm going to take you black and white. You tell me one thing, you better own up to that, you know. So I'm not going to give you any leeway one way or another just because I know what kind of style you do, you know, kind of thing. So,
well, and maybe that's my question to you is, like, where... In the course of the film, was there something that said to you that a girl falling in love with a guy she met in a diner is unrealistic?
So it's realistic, but it's just the fact that they had... Literally, we saw 2 dates, and that was it.
And 2 dates and a couple meetings at the cafe.
Okay. I'll give you that. Even so, if I see...
Like, it makes a difference.
If I see a woman shoot a guy in front of me, I'm out. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was doing it to protect her because John Hamm was threatening her too.
That's so. Right, but he, you know, he obviously is involved in this world, even though he said he doesn't want to be. So I understand she's thinking that, but it's like, let him deal with his demons and just say, "Call me when you're done. Let me know what's up." I could buy her testifying in court for him, sure, mm-hmm. but sticking around and driving for him with him in the same car, like. And I understand she was in danger. I think that was the motive, like, oh, they're coming after her. But really, at that point, the audience knew there's no other threat, really.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then Kevin Spacey ended up not being a threat at all, but trying to help. And then John Hamm, I couldn't believe he got shot and then kept going, you know, and all these different
really?
Things. He got out of the police. Like, I can buy one of them, but we talked about this when we did Sunshine. It's like, you know, when you're portraying a semi-realistic, you know, universe, you're making so many things happen that they're going, you know, it's a movie, I get it. But the unbelievable part of the movie is really the driving, right, and the getaways. But the fact that John Hamm is cornered, you know, with 20 cops and then somehow gets out, we don't know, but then meets him at the diner and then gets shot. And then it's fine. And then crashes his car. And then gets out and is fine. And then finally, you know, tumbles over the wall. I'm like,
and I just want to go on record as saying I love his death.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely love his death.
I think he should have. I think John Hamm being the ending boss, if we will, mm-hmm. it should have been Jamie Foxx. Because Jamie Foxx was the threat from the beginning. You know, he was the in-your-face, like, I don't like this kid. I think he should...
I love Jamie Foxx's death, too. Like, it was one of... Because that's the thing, is that it signified a few things. One, because that's... It's like the big turn of the movie.
That's what I was gonna say.
He's sitting there and he's doing what they say. He's going on these jobs. He's doing what they ask. He's doing all these things. He sees Jamie Foxx. He suspects Jamie Foxx killed like somebody in a convenience store.
Right.
He knows he killed the one thief earlier, and he's just seeing Jamie Foxx. And he's like, ah, he's gonna kill somebody else again. And it's this moment where. Oh, there's another movie that was similar to this. 10 Cloverfield Lane is similar to this, where you have a character who's very passive for the first half of the film, and just like they're just watching things happen, and they react, and then something happens, and they react, and then it gets to this point where he just says, "No, I'm going to do something about this. If I don't, he's going to shoot this lady and this security guard who don't need to be involved in this."
That's honestly where I do love this movie. That they, I mean, now that you bring that up, I mean, I'm still thinking. It does such a good job of building up Baby's, you know, pressure or tension throughout the entire movie, right? Like, he's getting out. And then it's like, all right, I'll do this one last job. It's like I'm watching Sons of Anarchy again. We're just going to do this one last job, then we're done. You know, and he's like, okay, I'm almost done. I'll do some bad things that I'll regret, but whatever, I'm almost done. I'll get out. And then finally, you see the straw that breaks the camel's back, and that's very evident. You know, yeah, he's not going to stand for this, and he's saying, screw it, I'm done, let's get out of here. And then I don't know if everyone knew that was going to happen with the steel poles or whatever. As soon as I saw that, I was like, okay, I know what's happening.
Well, I liked that, because they show a shot of it a couple times before it actually happens.
Yeah.
Once, like, a couple minutes before it happens.
I knew right then that was going to happen, having seen...
It took me a second, but, like, I think the second time they showed it, I'm like, oh, that looks dangerous.
And going back to, oh, this is an Edgar Wright film. There's lots of headshots in those movies.
We haven't had brutal bloody violence yet. What's going on here?
But that's again, though, where I had an issue, because it was like before it was kind of playful and whatnot, and I didn't feel like the build-up to not being playful was there. Because when you talk about Jamie Foxx's character having killed someone in a previous robbery, mm-hmm. that was one of my favorite shots. Baby Driver pulls up and his head is in the way and you don't see what's going on. So they're making a point of not showing you this violence, but just insinuating, hey, you know, they killed someone. And then he drives back and you kind of see the aftermath. And I really like that. That was probably my favorite shot of the whole movie. But then all of a sudden it just throws that out the window and just kill everybody. Not everybody. It's not nearly as bad as Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead. I don't know what At World's End is like. But yeah, then it just shows disregard for... We're just going to send a bunch of steel poles right through your chest, and then we're going to...
Well, and that's the thing, though, is, like, Baby Driver isn't doing the killing until that very moment when he kills Jamie Foxx. And so, like, that's why I loved that moment so much. Is cause
I don't know why he wouldn't have just... Well, I mean, I guess he had a gun, but I don't know. I would have thought his character could have
that's
just
his
run
thing,
out of...
Though. Like,
I guess
he's
it
a
is.
Driver.
It's a car. I don't know.
And
I just didn't like that.
That's what he says in that moment. He's like, he said drive, and I drove.
Yeah.
Okay, I drove. I did what I do.
Right, right.
So.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it worked.
I think it did. Like, we've said all this stuff, and I'm defending the movie. It isn't perfect. I need to watch it again. Because I think with the knowing what's going to happen and with a little bit less on the expectation of jokes and action in the whole movie, I might have a different opinion on it. But, like, I remember stepping out, and I just remember specifically the death of John Hamm when he gets... Because, like, the car goes over the edge of the building, and then he falls on the car, and it explodes.
Yeah.
It just was, like... I just remember totally loving it. I love the whole sequence where... John Hamm is driving forward and Baby Driver's bike driving backwards, and they're going through the, and I was like, oh, that was great. And then he's Baby Driver's like hops to another car and starts doing all this stuff. Like,
I love when he hopped over the car. You see that in the previews, but that was a sweet part.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought it would be a little weird. I'm like, he's not a parkour kind of kid, but then.
Well, that was my complaint about that scene is that, like, I mean, like, the sliding across the hood of the car, that makes sense. But then he does some other things. That was like, he doesn't feel in danger.
Yeah.
And I wanted that. Because, like, there's that... Because the great scene, he impales Jamie Foxx, and then they're all just like, crap, screw it, we're running. And they all run in different directions, and he didn't feel in danger, and that's what I really wanted in that scene. Mm. And that's absolutely like
right.
a moment
that's
like
goes back to the music.
Yeah.
It really could have amped that up, changed it, made it work well. But
yeah.
So altogether, I was pretty entertained throughout the movie. Like, as pure entertainment factor, I think it did really well. But I do have a question. As far as the music goes, there is Atomic Blonde that's coming out that the trailer seems to be cut very similar to the cadence of everything happening along the music.
Every trailer does that.
Yeah, I think that's just
ever since,
a trailer.
Like, ever since Guardians of the Galaxy 1 came out, like Suicide Squad did it, Star Trek Beyond did it, Batman vs. Superman did it. Like, that's just the popular thing. And Edgar Wright's been doing that for years, like, in his movies. Like, he does that in all of his films, in his TV shows, he does that. Like, it's just what he does. And so I could see why you're like, oh, they're stealing it from...
I don't think they'll do that with Atomic Blonde. I'd be very...
Arranged music that they use for that. But with Atomic Blonde, it's like exactly on the song. And I guess that's my question.
Edgar Wright does that. Even with...
Really?
Yeah.
I'm just clueless then.
It's just his... Like if you watch Spaced, like you should give Spaced a chance. Not a chance. Just watch it. It's great. You'll see that in that, and you'll see
or in Shaun of the Dead, where they're killing all the zombies. They're all going with Queen and doing this stuff.
Like it's just that's just Edgar Wright.
Okay,
but yeah, I don't think Atomic Blonde will adopt that at all.
I doubt it.
That'll be purely in the trailer.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be entirely serious, but it looks more like John Wick type. A little long takes, and
if I see that movie, it'll only be for James McAvoy because he looks sweet in that. But
yeah,
I don't know that
he's been doing a great job lately.
I've been over this a few times with other people, and I'm sure people will hate me for saying this, but I'm not about these skinny blonde girls or just girls manhandling men. You know, in this movie it looks like she's doing a good job of throwing her weight where she can, and referring to Atomic Blonde, but I can't get into that, because so many times it's like, you know, you do the physics behind, okay, how much force do you have in this punch? You know, how much damage are you really gonna do?
I saw the trailer a while back, but like, because that's the thing, is like a woman who's skinny, and the thing is, Charlize Theron is skinny, but I've never felt her as like supermodel skinny.
Well, that's what I didn't like about this trailer. I don't know why we're talking about this trailer so much, but in this trailer, it almost made her look like she was this Maggie Q type person.
Yeah.
You know, like super thin, super skinny, more than usual. Like in Italian Job, to bring that up again, like, I could see a punch hurting from her from there, but like doing all these kung fu moves, doing a Nikita type thing or an Alias type thing, I'm like, you're in stilette, you know, you're in high heels and you're doing all this stuff. I don't like that. Well, that's why we did what I did, like Wonder Woman, was I felt like, man, Gal is super buff. And she's not wearing
She used to train for the Israeli Defense Force, I found out.
Yeah,
she was a trainer, so it's like, oh, okay, so she knows how to fight.
No, and that's what I love. And it comes back full circle, just so everyone knows, to like me believing the movie, you know, the universe of the movie. Like, don't pull me out of it because this, you know, whether it's a skinny young girl thrown around a 230-pound guy or... you know, John Hamm living after so many things he should have died in, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And stealing a cop car and the cops not knowing where he is, like, that guy heard a shot. He would have said, he would have reported it. They would have been on his car, you know, coming to him, and they're like, oh, look, his car's driving away. You know, so he wouldn't have been able to get away very far, you know, and that whole scene I don't think would have happened at the end. If it was just a different car that he went and hijacked, I'd totally buy it. And it would have been great, in my opinion. But there's too many little things.
I think a lot of that was the visual element they wanted. Because it had a double meaning. It's like, oh, it's not only this life trying to come for him, but it's also responsibility and authority. But more to your point about, you know, stepping out of the movie, the stuff not being believable. For me, when I go into a movie, basically anything can happen. In my opinion, like what I want in a movie is to go sit down, and I would love it if a movie started off like a romantic comedy and then ended as a disaster film.
Sure.
You know, and I don't really mind unless there is a precedent set. Like if you go in and someone's like, well, nobody can do this, and then somebody does it, it gets a little weird.
Right. And that's, I mean, I think I just come at movies with too much of a crucial eye, and I don't know if it's the engineering in me or the writing classes I've had where I'm like, you have control over this, you know, you need to do better research or something, you know, that I just get so skeptical. I don't know. I mean, Matrix was awesome because the way that they bought all that stuff off where you're in the Matrix, so anything can happen in the Matrix. So it was super easy to buy into all that.
Fresh world.
But even then you had rules. And right. Even though you break those rules, the premise is that you're supposed to be able to break those rules eventually.
Yeah.
So, which is what made the rule breaking awesome.
Yeah. So, anyway, overall for me, like I said, I give it a couple stars. I give it a couple.
So, I think it's totally worth seeing in the theater.
Like, I think it's the best way to see it.
I think it's worth going. I think every movie's worth it in the theater.
Really?
I enjoy the theater because, well, yeah. I hate watching it at home where there's distractions or, you know, you have your phone, you pull yourself out of the movie. When you're in the theater, most of the time you're not doing anything. Maybe someone next to you is being a jerk or whatever, but they have cool seating now that eliminates most of that, and you just focus on the film. I can't tell you how many times I recommend a film to a friend and they come over and watch it, but all they're doing is hanging out on their phone the whole time, like, watch the movie. This is so awesome. You're missing it.
You can still get people on their phone in the movie, and I want to throw my popcorn drinks at them. Yeah. I'm going to settle at 4 stars. If you're judging it next to Edgar Wright standards, it would be like a 3-star.
Okay.
Overall. But 4 stars, like, by the end of the movie, I was all in. I was, like, really excited.
That would explain the 8.6... out of 10 on IMDb. I was wondering. I was just like, why? Everyone's loving this. So,
I would say a good solid 3.5. Purely just because I was entertained. I feel like it did a pretty good job at, like I said, just the slow trickle of character development, story development. I love that. And
right.
Beginning to end, I was pretty well involved.
That's the thing. Edgar Wright, he fumbled on the drama, I think, a little bit. But he is still Edgar Wright, and he still knows how to direct the hell out of a movie. He knows what he's doing. Like, if he tried to make a serious World War II drama, it wouldn't be the best World War II drama, but it would still be pretty dang good. Like, it'd still be like, all right, there's some great stuff in here.
Right.
Yeah. All right, guys, that about wraps it up for this week. Thanks for listening in. You can go to our website. I think at this point, we really want some feedback as far as what you guys think, what you like, what you don't like, so please reach out to us, frameofmind.reviews@gmail.com. Also on Facebook, Twitter, and we have our website, frameofmind.reviews.
Yep. Sounds good. Thanks for joining us this week.
It was fun. I like talking about movies.
Yeah. Well, we'll have you back sometime soon. All right. Well, that's it. Let's go drive some cars, Aaron.
Vroom, vroom. I get to go test drive a Tesla. I'm so excited.
Boom.
Right now.
Talk about baby.
Oh, but
driver.
Teslas don't go vroom vroom. They just kind of go.
I would just not even.
They don't even do that. They just go.
Yeah.
Oh, your wheels are moving.
But like 0 to 60 in 2.25 seconds. Yeah. I get to go do that like right now.
Still stupid. Okay.
Well, we'll get you out of here. Ready to go.
Look, I'm gonna be totally honest with you. I forgot you're here.
It's over. Go home.